Good morning.
Good morning.
We can call the meeting to order. We can have the roll call, please.
Yvette Etu.
Here.
Bruce Rinker.
Here.
Dan Moore.
Here.
Three members are present, which constitutes a quorum.
We stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Can I get a motion for the approval of the minutes at the September 18th meeting?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Can we turn it over to Mr. Steen for the financial report? No. Thank you.
Thanks, Commissioner Etu. We'll get the PowerPoint up. So that's not the finished presentation.
It's a new property.
Where is that?
Looks like Squire's Castle. Renovation.
Oh, that's okay.
Might have to go old school, Wade.
Yeah. Okay, well, while David's bringing that, Commissioners, what I'm going to do is just briefly, we'll talk about the results in February, or 9 months in, a little bit year-to-date, and at the end, talk about some of the challenges as we begin the work on compiling the budget for 2026. The chiefs have been working with Brian. Obviously, the economy right now is a little challenging. No challenge that can't be overcome, and talk about some of the things that we're facing as we do that. So that comes up on your first page, which is our overview. At the consolidated level, I did have one number highlighted. It's property taxes in September of 2025, and it's $1.325 million compared to $30,000 last year in September. That's just due to timing. In 2024, those monies that we would have received from Medina County and Cuyahoga County, some straggling property tax revenues will be received in October. So when you see the October year-to-date next month, that will match it. So it's just merely a timing thing, but I thought we should bring that out. The other item on what would be the consolidated at the top in construction expenses for September of 2025, we spent almost $13 million, $12,921,830. It's a fairly large expenditure for a month. And I did want to highlight a few things that went into that number. Last month in September, we spent $4.5 million on the Mandel Trail construction expenses. We spent $3.3 million on Primate Forest. We spent $1 million related to the Sailing Center and $1.7 million in Seneca Phase 4. So those four projects that they're, thank you, David. You can see the $12.9 million. Those four projects alone count for $10.5 million of that total spend. The rest of the construction expense is stuff that we would normally have. So that's at a consolidated level. The Zoom, the only item I wanted to highlight is they had a wonderful September. You can see almost $800,000 in admission revenue. It's highlighted. But year-to-date, we're still down a little bit. And year-to-date revenues are down. We've talked about that as we've gone along. They've maintained their expenses to 4% growth in expenses. Right there, 4% growth in expenses. And right now, we try to take a look at each month and then annually what their subsidy is. Right now, their subsidy is 35.8%. The goal is to get that to 25%, so we hope as the last 3 months come along, we may get to that point. The month of September mirrored the month of September last year. So it was a good month for the zoo. We're happy with how the zoo did in September. When you go to golf, and I will read you a few highlights from the golf team, but revenues year-to-date just on greens fees are $280,000 greater than last year, even given all the challenges with weather. And so total revenues are up 3% or almost $400,000. As it relates to rounds, in September of 2025, it was the second best September, trailing only 2020. So not since COVID have we done this well in September. They had 8% more, but it says amazingly, September of 2020 during COVID, there were 8% more rounds than 2025, and we didn't have one. We had one less course. We didn't have Ironwood then. Shawnee, Nassau Woods, and Big Net all had the largest growth compared to their prior September. So September was a really good month. The Seneca Driving Range opened on Monday, September 22nd, so we don't get the full effect of that. But as we start to see driving range revenue, that's going to push that up. All in all, they're doing a good job with collecting revenues and billing the schools, the local high schools that use our golf courses. And if you look at where they did for the month, they did actually better than September of last year and year to date. They're almost in line with where they were year to date last year. And as we've talked, they had some struggles because the weather was not good at the beginning of the year. So compliments to golf thus far. The two courses that stand out, and they were mentioned, Mastic, you can see it's running substantially ahead of where it was last year at this time, and Shawnee Hills running substantially ahead. Obviously, with construction at Seneca and other places, it impacted that.
Shawnee Hills had a tornado, too.
Yeah, Shawnee had a tornado. And they're still exceeding where they were last year.
Previous year.
In the enterprise funds, what I wanted to point out on the enterprise funds is you can see that year-to-date, concession revenues are down slightly. We've talked about that. It's down. The East 55th restaurant's been closed for the entire year. That's partially offset by Wallace Lake coming online. And it's also, we also have an issue right now due to timing that's going to correct itself. So in October, you're going to see those revenues come up when it relates to dock revenues. We talk about our largest enterprise operation, that's Merwin's, and you can see last year at this point, three quarters of the year, they were at a positive 194, now they're at a positive 359, doing extremely well, but then things like the restaurant are not even there, so that impacts us. But in terms of enterprise, we're happy with where we are. We wish the weather were a little bit more cooperative, but we are where we are, and so we just got to keep doing the best we can in these last 3 months of this year. Nothing really to raise up here on the other, what I would call smaller enterprise funds. You can see Huntington's running about where it did last year. We keep an eye on that. And most of the others, parking is still a little bit behind where it was last year, and we've talked about that. That's just some of our downtown tenants have found other parking, and we're replacing those, and that's catching up. The last thing I would point out, and I raised this up because some of you, and I'm guessing Commissioner Itu might have seen this, there's a negative in what would have been an expense line. This is due to a correction for personnel that were being charged to this particular operating center. There were staff that were being charged there that should have been charged other places. We've gathered all that information, booked that entry one time, and so the year-to-date number is correct, but it looks odd when you look at September. But year-to-date, the nature shops are running behind where they were last year. Again, we've talked about some of the things that were present last year with the eclipse and things like that that we did not have this year. But all in all, we're in a good spot in September. We wish we were better. As we move now toward the budget period, what I wanted to do is just share a few comments of some things that we're talking about as we look at preparing the budget for next year. First and foremost, there are a number of positions that are not going to be funded as we try to shrink our personnel, our staff budget down, just to make sure that we stay in line with the 10-year levy projection. We're still wrestling with the reduction in property tax revenues and the collections that are not coming in where we thought they would be. You've probably read in the paper where the county's going to be doing a $40 million tax lien sale. They've refunded a $35 million out of the real estate assessment fund, but that still doesn't help collections. So we're going to keep our eyes very closely on that first half collection of 2026 to see, does the county actually turn the corner and start to collect those delinquent taxes and do a better job of collecting current taxes? Because that's what caused the delinquency, is not collecting current taxes. Right now we're budgeting conservatively, assuming that we won't see increases in
real estate tax revenue with the construction and things going on. We thought we would see that, but we're not going to see that. You'll hear later about health insurance costs are going up about 7.5% this year, compounded by 18% last year. Simple things like salt, we got our bid from the state, was $10.50 per ton. Doesn't sound like a lot, but that's a 19.6% increase just in salt. We have to refill our salt bins. Property insurance went from $1.1 million to $1.5 million, and you'll hear a little bit about that. Again, no fault of anyone. This is just what's going on in the marketplace. And just inflation in general, right now it's running at about 3%. So the cost of just normally living life, doing business in the parks, has gone up 3% over this year. So the chiefs and Brian are working very hard on compiling a budget that is tight, that meets our promises to the taxpayers to continue to provide excellent services, but stays within the confines of our 10-year levy, which was approved in 2022.
Do we have a sense of what the county is doing to change its manner of collection, if it can?
Commissioner, I do not. I've talked with them a number of times. I think right now they're just trying to address the delinquencies that weren't collected. I don't know if they plan on sending bills early. I don't know if there's going to be any kind of follow-up or any kind of public information provided.
Is there something they're not doing, or is this just circumstance?
I think a big part is circumstances. When we inquired, they used the example of the city of Cleveland that had a big school levy that increased the taxes due, and so many of the delinquencies were within the city of Cleveland, people on fixed incomes that are having trouble paying their property taxes. And you can see that evidenced by the citizen-led petition to do away with property taxes, as well as all the discussion at the State House about what do we do about property taxes. It's an issue that's affecting not just us, every county, every citizen. I hope the county is devising a plan to do better outreach and to assist taxpayers so they can pay their taxes, because we need those revenues.
Is there any discussion in Columbus on how counties can address this?
The discussion there actually is more targeted on helping taxpayers, and it's not as positive. And I know Rose has been in communication with our contacts in Columbus, not so much about the park districts and the libraries and the schools, but how do taxpayers benefit or how do taxpayers survive. But no, their conversations tend to focus on the other side, on the taxpayer, not on us, the recipient of those tax dollars.
But meanwhile, state revenues are up, right?
State revenues are up. Yeah, there's no reduction in personal income tax at the state level. It's all locally collected and levied property taxes. It's interesting in that property taxes are all voted on positively by voters. No tax gets on their tax bill if they haven't approved it. So these are all taxes that have been approved by taxpayers. That now they're, in fact, we had a 77% approval rating on our tax levy. And now the state's looking at whether or not that should still stay in place.
Do we have a sense over the last 10 to 15 years how the state has been shrinking the revenue distributed to local government?
I know we have some information internally. Commissioner, I can't set it off the top of my head. We have looked at how much the state has shrunk money going to schools and libraries and others, but not shrunk their spending. But I can get that for you. I don't have that.
I mean, is that something we should be talking about more, that to raise people's awareness that we have a state government that's basically abandoning local government?
In fact, Brian has asked staff to take a look at that, and we are going to be sharing that information, because what they're doing in Columbus is not helpful to local governments. It's not helpful to libraries, schools, park districts, those of us that rely on property taxes. It's a challenge for us right now. It's a real challenge what they're doing in Columbus. And
thank you.
Thank you, commissioners. That's all I had on the finance report.
Thank you, Wade. Any other questions?
And we are back to the castle.
Yes, we are.
On that note, I'm going to go to our action items. With us this morning, we have three special retiring guests, one of which, Valerie Eck, had a last-minute emergency. She was unable to attend, but she has worked for the Cleveland Metro Parks for more than 10 years in a variety of different capacities at the Chalet. She has made a tremendous difference in how Metro Parks carries out its guest focus part of its core values. Chuck Engelhardt is with us today, 33 years of service. Joe?
Commissioners, it's my pleasure to introduce Chuck Engelhardt. Come on up, Chuck. I think the fact that Chuck is even at this month's board meeting is a testament to who Chuck is. Normally, when folks retire, they come 2 months or 3 months after the retirement date. Chuck retired only 13 days ago, but he had into HR all of his accolades and accomplishments and work history ahead of time before the day he even retired so that we could be prepared to actually bring him forward to this meeting. Chuck is exceptionally detailed. Chuck is someone who I've always counted on to get things done without a lot of oversight. He puts a lot of effort and time into all of his tasks, and it really showed through with his work. Chuck was telling me a story the other day about how it was just kind of happenstance that he works for the Cleveland Metro Parks. He was working in the private sector, and a coworker mentioned a job posting here at Cleveland Metro Parks that he wasn't even looking for and decided to apply, and now here he is after a storied career with the Cleveland Metro Parks. Started in the forestry division and rose to the role of a director of parks, reporting up to me and managing one of our regions. And he did it in a way that I think won't be able to be replaced. Everyone has a unique skill set that works in our division. Chuck truly has a unique skill set that doesn't exist with any other human being in Cleveland Metro Parks. It is that attention to detail, that project work, and his passion for equality and equity amongst the staff and amongst the patrons that use our parks. Chuck was always a champion for equality. All of the parks that he oversaw, especially the parks over on the east side, he put an extreme amount of care and effort into making sure that everything looked good for the folks in those communities that use those parks. So introduce Chuck Engelhardt.
Thank you, everyone. I definitely want to thank the Board of Park Commissioners, Brian, you, Joe, and all the park staff who are here and those who aren't for all of the trust and support, the opportunities I've had throughout 33 years and to really pull together a wonderful career here. I'm very proud to have worked for and will continue to be a member of Cleveland Metro Parks. As Brian said, you may be retiring, but it's like the firm, you don't leave in a sense. Very, very proud of that. Yeah, and the work that everyone does here is such wonderful work. So I hope and trust that my contributions I've made over 33 years have upheld our core values and also helped to propel our mission forward. I trust that I've done that, and I'm very proud once again, and I encourage everybody to keep up the great work. This is a wonderful organization.
Hey,
on behalf of Anthony J. Russo, the Board of Park Commissioners, this resolution, and I know you wrote it, but really is.
I want to make sure everything was there.
I absolutely love it. This reads like a legacy of leadership. When we think of the Team Lorax, the Elm program, Tag a Tea program, Tag a Tree program, the integrated park district's vegetation management policy plan, risk tree mitigation. You have been a true friend to the trees of Cleveland Metro Parks, and you were most recently recognized with Lynn Lisner and the volunteer program, resulting in the 2024 program receiving Outstanding Community or Governmental Program Award by the National Recycling Coalition. Chuck, a true testament to your leadership here at Cleveland Metro Parks. We wish you all the best, and we know Europe will always be here. Chief, next up is Todd Zambetti.
Morning, Brian. Morning, Commissioners. Todd? Todd, like Chuck, left 2 weeks ago, and he's back here already, so feels like he never left. Get a uniform on and get to work. Would you? I'd appreciate it. Todd did a great job for us for over 23 years. Started as a part-time ranger in January of 2002, and then advanced to full-time status in May of 2004. And over the course of those 23 years, he served in several vital roles for our organization, including field training officer for 10 years and firearms instructor for 19. In 2005, he was honored with a life-saving award for his heroic actions during a swift water rescue in Rocky River. Officer Zambetti's dedication, leadership, and commitment to public safety have definitely left a lasting impact on the department and the community. His retirement in September 2025 marks the conclusion of a remarkable career filled with service, membership, and excellence. While his departure is bittersweet, we celebrate his accomplishments and thank him for many years of outstanding service. He will be deeply missed by colleagues and friends alike. You know, I will be here 4 years next month. And when I got here, I had a one-on-one with everybody. And I remember having a sit-down with Todd. And it was a very, very open conversation. And he just told me, he goes, Chief, I'm really looking forward to a fresh start here and working for you. And I can tell you, every day that he came to work, he came with an excellent attitude, deeply committed to his chosen profession of law enforcement, and just really wanted to go out there each and every day and do the right thing. And for that, I'm deeply indebted for your service, Todd. Job well done, my friend.
Todd, on behalf of Anthony Geruso, the Board of Park Commissioners, we'd like to acknowledge you for your more than 23 years of service. I love the fact that there's a life-saving award for your heroic actions, stepping into Rocky River. As we know, we are a riparian system, so we do have a lot of those activities, but we appreciate your years of service to the Cleveland Metro Parks, and we wish you all the best in your retirement. Congratulations. The recommended action honoring our three retirees falls in the top portion of page 9.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The next is 2025 budget adjustment number 9.
Thank you, Brian. Commissioners, on page 10, you'll see budget adjustment number 9. The details there, it's in the amount of $4,778,760. Before I ask your approval of that adjustment, I think I should add some context because we just talked about finances. Two of the recommended adjustments, one is for $3,686,864 for the Irishtown Bend project, and that's all covered by new funds from Land Studio for the Osborne Plural Park component. So Land Studio provided $3.8 million. $1 million is to increase the appropriations for the Cleveland Lakefront Bikeway East 9th to East 55th, milestone number one. That's covered by the Mandel Foundation. So over $4.6 million, almost $4.7 million of this adjustment are covered by money coming from others. So that's why I ask your approval of budget adjustment number 9.
Move the approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
The next is the request for approval for 2026 rates and user fees. Wade?
Thanks, Brian. Commissioners, all of the various chiefs and their reports went through all of the rates and user charges that we charge for different activities within the park district and have proposed and have provided to you on page 46 and 47 a detail of what the 2025 rates were and what the proposed rates for 2026. We've reviewed those in finance. They all look appropriate and they are consistent with covering all costs. I would ask your approval.
Move to approve the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Next is Euclid Creek Reservation. This is an authorization to submit grant application to the Land and Water Conservation Fund and commit funds for improvements at Euclid Beach. This is something that we've gone after a couple of times. We hope to be successful this time. This request is for a concept similar to Edgewater Park, the Lindsay Family Play Space, which opened in 2021. We do have outside commitments to match the number. We believe that are still in place in order to bring this project forward in the amount of $1 million. This is something that we believe will be additive to the Euclid Beach, Villa Angela, and Wildwood areas. This recommended action falls in the mid portion of page 12 to commit the one for one match with funds coming from an outside source to be able to commit to doing this project. This is a grant through the Ohio Department of Natural Resources. Recommended action falls in the mid portion of page 12.
Move to approve the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next action item we have is Asian Lantern Festival Agreement, Asian Lantern Festival Cleveland Metro Park Zoo. We are looking to enter into a new three-year lease. We have been very successful in its first 8 years. The Lantern Festival set domestic and international attendance records of nearly 150,000 more people, 183,000 more guests. It has proven very successful over the last 8 years. During this next cycle, we will, if approved, we will hit our 10-year anniversary. We've continued to work through all of the different nuances related to shipping and tariffs and others to be able to provide this wonderful event here at the Cleveland Metro Park Zoo, which does help with attendance and overall revenue and cost sharing. Recommended action falls in the mid-top portion of page 14 to execute the agreement.
Move to approve the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Next is change order number one, contract 1837 Mandel Community Trail Lighting Installation. This is something that we have been working on with Cuyahoga County, the City of Cleveland, and the Mandel Foundation. We've been able to basically look at a 2.7-mile shared path from East 9th all the way to East 55th. It has progressed through, and it will also continue on through MLK, but this is basically putting the lighting package together. The recommended action falls in the bottom portion of page 15 with Independence Excavating for the change order for the lighting, paid for in full by the Mandel Community Foundation. Recommended action falls in the bottom portion of page 15.
Move to approve the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next one is the Sagamore Trail Connector. I would love David to not bring up the castle, but hopefully bring up the map of this and its importance. Cleveland Metro Parks, Summit Metro Parks, and the National Park Service, provided they decide to reopen the government. This is a project that really looks at the continuation of continuous connections through more than 51 miles all the way from Rocky River. If you look at most recently, we were able to complete a section on the far east side, Richmond Road. If you look at this particular connector down here, when you look at its ground zero of Detroit Road all the way through, you can see that this is one of the last connections that is needing to be made as we march our way towards South Chagrin and eventually through the activity in what is looked at as in the park, in the green portion. Can we continue to bring that trail forward through Moreland Hills and completing the vision of a connection or an opportunity to connect? And so when you look at this as the next connector, we're getting that much closer. So time and perseverance will build the pressure system around. We are looking at what we can do in Moreland Hills on Metro Parks property and then continue on. But this is the one of the last missing pieces, and it is a partnership again between Summit and the Cuyahoga Valley National Park. So we look for the approval to enter into a project development agreement with the agencies listed on the top portion of page 17.
Can you show the next picture too?
For sure. It's very nondescript.
Yeah, but a chunk of it's in Summit, right?
It is. Actually, the most majority most of it is.
Yeah, yeah, 2 miles.
We have our little part. Mm-hmm.
And there's no way to cross canal except at grade?
Time will tell.
Okay, sorry.
Recommended action falls in the top portion of page 17.
Move to approve the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Next is a professional services agreement 6855 Sagamore Connector Trail Bedford Reservation. This is the process by which we're going to go through to look at the bridge, the connection. We're looking to work with Arcadis, who has been with us for a number of years, to cover these type of activities. Again, because we're working with the federal, we're just preemptively getting ready to, provided the federal government decides to fund itself and reopen. But this is a project that will take a bit of time as we're working through this, but again, as you can see, one of the most important connections. Recommended action falls in the bottom portion of page 18.
Can I ask a question, Brian? The ultimate bridge, what do we estimate it's going to cost?
Well, without Sean here, I am not going to give an answer, but I can definitely get back to you. Prior to, again, I'm not understanding if it's going to be, you know, a single span. I actually don't know where that will actually end up yet. So if it's a cable or a stay, these are all things that would fall under kind of the engineering and the opportunities. Depends on the alignment and the banks. Yeah. And so.
Okay.
Sarah, do you have? Oh, perfect. Thank you, Sarah. Teamwork.
So we are being authorized for design of the bridge, but current estimates are about $600,000. It would be just kind of a standard trail bridge going across the canal and estimating about a 60-foot span for that. So it's going to match the style of existing crossings for the most part of the canal. And that's one of the things that we need the environmental services for is, since we're dealing with a historic area with the canal, making sure everything fits and that we're doing things to national park standards.
Very good, thank you. Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
The next is the First Amendment to a Professional Services Agreement for Environmental Services. This is City of Cleveland Land Utilization Program property. This is in Garfield Reservation. This particular area, if we bring the map up, the parcel numbers adjacent to Garfield Reservation, the City of Cleveland. This has been part of a strategy for well over 20 years of looking at how do we create better access to the tallest waterfall in Northeast Ohio, particularly in Cleveland Metro Parks at Mill Creek Falls. I'm not sure if David's going to be able to bring it up or not, but we were authorized to complete underground storage tank closure activities, Tier 1 investigation. We found that there happened to be one more that was not mapped, and so we did have an additional consumption in the amount of $17,672 to clean the site. We also will be partnering, and Sarah, if you want to come up on ODOT, just to give a highlight of what's actually, so this is a preemptive opportunity where it peels off from one, turns into a one-way, and a very confusing area of the community. But we're partnering with everyone to try to reimagine that particular space.
Yeah, so the Miles Turney East 93rd area that's always on the news for having traffic snarls and things, ODOT is looking at actually taking away one of those bridges. They've conducted an alternatives evaluation study looking at consolidating those bridges. So that opens up some opportunities then for rethinking the entrance to the Mill Creek Falls area of Garfield Park Reservation. And we've been in contact with ODOT as part of the planning with the RAISE grant because the Morgana Booth Avenue extension feeds into this area. And so just making sure that we're keeping bicycle and pedestrian access through there, but at that, the ODOT project of looking at those Broadway bridges is going to take several more years, but they are looking to progress that design and construction would probably be around like the 2029, 2030 timeframe based on the AER that they completed.
We'll bring an information item back just to highlight the mapping and kind of all the work that's been done and the different acquisitions too, because there's been a strategy with the land bank to create better access in that particular park. Nice. Mm-hmm. Recommended action falls on mid portion, bottom of 19 and 20.
Move approval of the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
The next may be my least favorite action item of the year, or my favorite action item. Thank you for coming. 2025-2026 property and liability insurance coverages. We have seen an increase, but Greg is here to help walk us through.
Thanks, Brian. Good morning, commissioners. As Brian mentioned, we have our property and liability insurance coverages here today. Just by way of background, we had an RFP 2 years ago. We only had one respondent or one proposal, and that was from the our agent, Jackson Deacon Associates, and our insurance company, which is Tokio Marine HCC. So we're entering the third year of a five-year cycle. I will say that we're not locked into that, right? So we say it's a five-year cycle, but there's no agreement or something that says it's for 5 years. So should we look to go in a different direction, we can always do that. So this is really a renewal. So it's a 1 year with renewals after that is really what we're looking at. Wade alluded to a little bit about the market. The market is very, very challenging, and I'll tell you why in a second here. We're looking mostly at the property, but as you know, everything is more expensive right now, and I'm sure your own personal property insurance, home insurance has probably gone up as well. I will talk about that here in a second, though. As you see, the premium for this year has gone up, as Wade had mentioned, about 32% over last year. mainly the driver is not losses, so our loss history is very, very good. So it's not because buildings or other things are being damaged or we have all these liability claims or anything like that. We do a fantastic job of managing those things. What we're really looking at and what our pain point is right now is our property. Our property insurance has gone up 60%. Now, there are two general reasons or issues with our property as the insurance company sees it. Number one, we have over $500 million in value of building value right now, which once you get to that threshold, you know, insurance companies kind of raise their eyebrows and it's a little bit of a yellow flag for them, particularly when we're looking at all that value or most of that value is in one county, right? It's mostly in Cuyahoga County. So that makes them very nervous. Number two, is what they're seeing is the makeup of some of our buildings are not what they would like to see. So we have a lot of wood frame buildings, shelters, those sorts of things, which is not their favorite thing to see. The reinsurance market is very, very tricky right now as well. So it's kind of like insurance for the insurance company, right? So in order for the insurance company to cover all their losses, they have to go out to a reinsurer to make sure they can cover all their losses from all their insured. And so that will cost premium. Of course, who do they pass that, you know, cost on to? Well, they pass that cost on to us. And so that's generally why we're seeing a 6% increase in our property rates and a 32% increase overall. I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have at this point.
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Recommended action starts on the top portion of page 20 and carries its way through. We do appreciate the work of our partners trying to make sure we can control costs. We also will be looking at a whole scale. Should we be breaking out some of these? Should we be looking, because we have land in Hinckley Township of Medina County, so we're going to be looking at other ways to try to maintain costs or bring them down.
Move approval of the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is 2026 Metro Parks Employee Group Healthcare Benefits. Matt, look at you all dressed up today. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. Unfortunately, we, similar to property and liability, we are operating in a difficult market in health insurance as well. Just by way of background, really quick, we operate two types of plans at Cleveland Metro Parks. We have a self-insured medical plan, and under a self-insured medical plan, as it implies, we pay the actual medical claims dollar for dollar. We do carry stop-loss insurance, which is both on the individual claims. We have $175,000 deductible on individual claims, and then we have an aggregate stop-loss insurance that protects us at 125% of expected claims in a given year. We do contract with Cigna currently to administer the plan and access their network discounts, and employees have three plan options to choose from: two PPO plans and a high deductible health savings account plan. And employees contribute between 5% and 18%, depending on their plan choice and their union or non-union status. We offer a full or a large scope of fully insured benefits. These are traditional types of insurance that we pay, where we pay a premium. The insurance and risk is taken by the insurance companies. That's our dental and vision. And then a myriad of supplemental benefits, life insurance, long-term disability, employee assistance program, and some employee paid benefits. So our overall spend in 2025, the budget's $13.1 million. Three-fourths of that is attributed to the medical claims payment, and that's obviously the most volatile area. That's the area where we're kind of subject to usage and ebbs and flows from year to year. 2% goes to Cigna for medical administration, 8% for that stop-loss insurance, and then the fully insured programs account for 15%. So about 25% is very stable, 75% is subject to year-to-year variation. This year, we're actually performing remarkably close to budget, which at our size is not necessarily the norm. Usually there's more volatility at our size, at about 630 employees on the plan. But we are at 93% of revenue. So the revenue comes from department payments into the self-insured fund and employee payments in, and then we use that money to pay out medical claims, the medical administration, and the stop-loss premiums. However, that 93% performance is buoyed a little bit by some stop-loss reimbursements. So we have three claims that have hit that 175 deductible. So we have
received $478,000 back to the fund. So we're actually performing at about 98% if you take those stop-loss reimbursements out. So again, that's remarkably close. We've been able to return $640,000 to the self-insured medical reserve. So we sit at a balance of about $2.5 million, which is the ideal number to be at because that covers that 25% on the aggregate side so that we have that in the reserve in case we have that terrible catastrophic year. Unfortunately, it's just like your car insurance, though. If you get in an accident, the insurance covers you in that year, but guess what's going to happen next year? You're going to pay back that in premium increases. I'll talk about that in a second. Current performance, we have six catastrophic claims, which are driving about 17% of the total claim spend. If we look at claims 75K and above, that is 13 claims accounting for a quarter of our spend. And so much of what we've seen in increases over the past 3 years has been driven by these high-cost individual claims, a very small percentage of the claims driving most of the experience that we're seeing. We don't want to look at things in a vacuum, so we often, we like to compare ourselves to other public sector entities in the state of Ohio. And if you look here, this is just a retrospective of premium increases over the past 7 years. And you can see here that the statewide average, obviously with such a large sample size, is a pretty linear amount here of increases. We had a remarkable run from 2019 through 2023, really, where premiums remained largely flat. We had what I would consider a regression to the mean, kind of a market correction in 2025, where we had to increase premiums 18% due to large claims increases in 2024. But as you can see, comparing ourselves at our premium level versus the statewide average, we are significantly below in what we spend per employee on health insurance. We still perform remarkably well. Again, we kind of had this market correction here that was more regression to the mean. We offer good value in our benefits, much like other public sector entities do, but we kind of had that catch up in 2024, and then we saw it in our 2025 premiums. We're in a difficult market, just like property and casualty that you just heard. Mercer, which is the largest nonprofit that evaluates health insurance, both private and public, is estimating one of the highest overall cost increase going into 2026. 6.5%, they're estimating all medical plan costs increases to employers, which is the largest increase since 2010. There's a myriad of reasons, new drug treatments, new diagnostic tests that are wonderful. They're great, but they're expensive. We're seeing consolidation of providers into fewer, larger health systems. You see that in the Cleveland market, general inflation in the economy, and still a lingering effect of delayed or miscare during COVID-19 that is hitting medical plans. What are we doing to try to contain some of those costs? We work closely with Cigna and our benefit consultants. We're really focused on enhanced case management of the high cost claims. Again, that's our main driver of cost increase. So we're trying to steer services for those high cost claims so that there's care coordination, no redundancies, the best price point for biological drugs and other high cost specialty drugs. We're trying to support members with chronic and pre-chronic conditions. We're focused on preventive care. We currently are at 10% above the benchmark rate for Cigna with preventive care, but we continue to try to push that, especially on the cancer screening side, because that is our main cost driver is cancers. And we're working with employees on consumerism in the healthcare market. So going into 2026, we are looking at a 33% increase to our stop loss. That's the one contract that requires approval. Really, we're paying for the past 2 years of dipping into that stop loss and receiving those reimbursements. That all other benefit lines are under contract with no increases. That 33% to the stop loss translates to a 7.5% premium increase for all medical plans. So that's going to cost an employee about $1.30 to $14.59, that's actually per pay in 2026. Any questions?
I think the team and Matt and Harold and the entire team have done an amazing job, again, trying to provide healthcare, knowing we have some challenging times and the fact that we are self-insured. They've done a fantastic job, and we continue to try to find ways to contain costs as best we possibly can. Recommended action falls on the top portion of page 22.
Can I ask a couple of questions here?
Matt needed a drink of water. He'll be back.
If we were to look at the average age of the Metro Park employer and compare it to the state data that you had up there, what would that show?
We have tended to skew on the younger side. So when we look at population indicators of why there may be cost increases, we tend to skew on the younger side population-wise. The one number that we're looking at is we tend to be a magnet plan. We have more spouses on our plan than you would traditionally expect, more family members on our plan. So about 6 years ago, we implemented a spousal surcharge to try to drive spouses to their own employer's plan. So as we go into collective bargaining and in the future, we're going to continue to look at that. That's really more, it's more the spouse issue is really what drives more of our costs than the actual age of our employees.
The second question is on specific treatments. Do you negotiate with any of the hospitals directly?
We do not currently. We work through Cigna's network on that. We have a few special arrangements, for example, for transplants. We're in a special narrow network where employees actually get 100% coverage for organ transplants. That, though, is, even though we provide that at full cost or full pay to the employees, research has shown that we have a much reduced cost because we're using a center of excellence, a higher performing health center. So we've done some of those arrangements. I think next thing we'll be looking at is potentially some direct pharmaceutical negotiations, looking at carving pharmaceutical out in the future. Mm-hmm. That's where you're seeing a lot of employers go to, is trying to get away from the PBMs and the surcharges that you pay in those markets and doing more direct employer negotiated pharmaceutical arrangements. So I would expect that that's a little bit more reasonable for an employer our side to get into than direct negotiation with the large hospital systems.
So with cancer then, do you have a preferred provider in Cleveland, or is that up to Cigna?
Currently, our network does include all three hospital systems. We do have a narrow network preferred specialty pharmacy. It's called Accredo, that is through Cigna. So we try to control the drug costs through that so that we're controlling location of service, trying to drive more outpatient usage of that, and negotiating and leveraging our buying power in that area. But we don't have specific, outside of the three main hospital systems, any specific hospital system contracts. We have had conversations with MetroHealth in the past about working with them. We just frankly haven't seen the cost savings to drive employees to go that direction.
Well, I'm glad you're spending a lot of time on this, because this is going to get worse before it gets better. And so being on the absolute top of it is going to be absolutely critical. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks.
Move the motion, I guess.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We will move into Ward of Tab action items. All bids. Just one to note on Sourcewell Co-op 6979, 75 golf carts. This was part of the plan almost a decade ago where we started buying golf carts. This is actually the fleet that sits at Ironwood. We will be turning that one out and selling those. Those carts are approximately of age of 12 to 15 years, which is probably 6 years past their normal life cycle. So we're going to replace those carts, and we will be selling those. Recommended action on those falls in the top portion of page 25.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Two resolutions, vouchers and payroll. Wade.
Thank you, Brian. Commissioners, on page 37, you'll see resolution 25-10-143 in the amount of $16,410,374.22. All of the vouchers that are listed, including wires, EFTs, and direct debits, have been reviewed for their propriety and comply with the legal requirements of their high revised code, and I would ask your approval.
Move to approve the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Commissioners, on page 38, you'll see resolution 25-10-144
2023-144. This involves Arborware. That is not a typo. It's actually negative $38.20. We are getting a credit back. But when I ask about that, I guess they've always put those forward. So some of the items that were purchased from Arborware were returned, so we get a credit, and we're asking your approval of that credit from Arborware.
Move to approve.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Dan Moore abstained. Thank you so much. Mr. Itu, if pleasure, public comments.
Thank you. Any public comments? Marty?
How about some environmental concerns for a change? Many of your biggest outlays also have significant environmental impact. As you look to cut costs going forward, plan to also cut pollution for a win-win. A recent video with Brian touted the stormwater paving improvements done right here, which I applauded at the time. Yet just last month, the 2025 park paving, originally at $175,000, ended up more than double at $450,000. Now 1.5 times that for 26, and who knows what final cost. Paving should be predictable. Permeable costs more initially, but saves money and is more sustainable long term. Detention basins help, but even better to avoid the runoff. Speaking of avoiding runoff, for years, Metro Park golf chemicals were addressed here, aiming to decrease their use. Minimizing sewage outflow at Edgewater is pricey, but is being debated, though incidents are down. Yet chemical runoff from ag and golf is not mentioned here. The damage is ongoing and feeds the blue-green algae in ponds in Lake Erie. Toxic effects of herbicides, fungicides, pesticides outweigh even the fertilizer effects. Gulf employees, like farmers, face increased cancer risks. Nonetheless, chemical use at Metro Parks grows annually. The worst kind of rough for golfers and other living things. Some Metro Parks hazards relate to buildings. Red Wing shelter is being checked for asbestos. Good idea. How about the Seneca Clubhouse? Was the asbestos there ever removed? Where else is there asbestos in Metro Parks? Are employees or the public being exposed to this known cancer hazard, which is always checked for with new properties and demos? I understand that you're looking for revenue, but construction of cell towers in Metro Parks would cause ongoing damage, disrupting ecosystems, and encouraging invasives, not to mention how ugly they are. Keep them outside our park. Don't be guilty of violating what your deed restrictions have stopped others from doing, for good reason. Towers needed for safety? My suggestion of flock cameras was initially derided. And Chagrin Valley Dispatch's big claim was to be able to pinpoint any location. That was their selling point. Except for emergencies, the park should get folks off their phones and looking around them. Tell them that their selfie can be sent later. Don't let experiencing the natural world become like Topgolf, where the simulation becomes reality. See the big picture and practice what you preach. Thank you.
Brian, it is sort of interesting, the data that's coming up now on toxicity of various herbicides. It's, you know, apparently Parkinson's is just going up very rapidly because of this. And, you know, using malathion in spring, elm trees and all that sort of stuff. So I think it is a good idea to make sure our environmental people are looking at how much of what we're using. A lot of the U.S. herbicides aren't allowed in Europe, including Roundup. Kind of interesting.
Thank you. Any other public comment? We will move into information items. The 2025 National Procurement Institute, NPI, Achievement of Excellence Award. This is the 16th time, 15th consecutive Cleveland Metro Parks team. Let's give them a huge round of applause to begin with. just a fun stat, 2025, there were 216 successful applicants, 85 cities, 48 counties, 23 special districts, 26 school districts, 15 higher eds, 7 state provincial, 12 municipalities. Cleveland Metro Parks was one of only 2 in Ohio agencies and one of 23 special park districts. Congratulations to Michelle, Wade, and the entire team on our procurement. The next info item is the Spotted Turtle Conservation Program in Cleveland Metro Parks. With us this morning, we have Nathan Beyer, PhD, and Dr. Mike Selig. Welcome.
Thank you, Brian. So we are hoping to, or we are planning on sharing with you some conservation work that we've done in the last couple of years for Spotted Turtles. David is going to share with us, or share with you, a video that our Cleveland Metro Parks marketing department put together to kind of share the story, not only with you guys, but with the entire community as well.
It's fitting that it comes on slowly.
Oh. Oh boy. Back to a council meeting.
What is that tower? Do you recognize?
It's in Portugal. I can't remember. It's Porto or Lisbon.
Welcome to an undisclosed site at this wonderful wetland habitat that we're at, and we're gearing up for World Turtle Day, which is a celebration of the biodiversity of turtles across the world, and also an acknowledgement of the sorts of dangers that are currently facing our turtles. This project that we're undertaking at this site takes animals that have been basically collected through the pet trade, confiscated, and puts them back into the wild, and is really a great first step towards repatriating a lot of our native turtles.
One of the unfortunate things about spotted turtles is that they are one of the most trafficked species of animal in North America. I think most people think of the illegal wildlife trade and they think of, you know, rhinos and elephants, things that happen overseas. And this is an example of, you know, the illegal wildlife trade happening right here in our backyard. This is an effort to try and kind of right that wrong and allow us to be able to kind of get some animals that were formerly taken out of the wild and be able to get them back into the wild where they belong. In 2018, there was a large confiscation of spotted turtles that happened. About a year afterwards, the zoo and a number of other zoos and aquariums and universities were approached to try and provide temporary housing for these spotted turtles while we tried to figure out what to do with them. We ended up housing here at the Cleveland Metro Park Zoo about 25 of those turtles, and the rest of the turtles got partitioned off to other organizations. While they were here, we started having conversations with our natural resources department and ultimately settled on this site for a potential release. Some of the challenges with releasing spotted turtles is trying to determine where they're from and trying to make sure that they don't have any diseases that potentially could be problems for other turtles that might be here. From 2019 to now, that's been, you know, a long 6 years, but it's taken us a long time to kind of get through that genetics process, go through the disease screening, and all through that time, the zoo's been responsible for caring for those turtles.
You know, this habitat that we're in today is really special, has some really high quality wetlands, really excellent habitat types. There's a mosaic of habitats down here, which is really great for these turtles and should give them the best shot of really reintegrating back into the system here. We've had some really great partners that have helped us along the way. USDA Wildlife Services has really been a huge help to us. They actually, on some of our pins here, were able to come out and add some cameras and add some electrobraid and keep out some of our predators that might influence these guys as they get head started here. A lot of years of invasive plant work and preparation for us to get to this point. To make sure that this is as high quality as possible when we get them back on the landscape. These turtles, like, there isn't a special recipe. There's really a lot more that they're doing and looking at than I think a lot of times we realize. And when you can give them the blank slate with a lot of options, they're gonna choose what they want.
When we received the call from Cleveland Zoo to join in this project, we were thrilled to be conservation partners with them. Not only was this in our backyard, but we could help right that road from confiscation all the way to the wild. This is not just Akron, Cleveland. There's tons of organizations working on this. Part of it's through the American Zoo Association's SAFE program. So that's Save Animals from Extinction, and we're working with all of the North American turtle species to try and make this road to home.
I just want to say thanks to all of the partners that helped between the Cleveland Metro Park Zoo, the Cleveland Metro Parks Natural Resources Department, the Akron Zoo, Tennessee Aquarium, Dalton State University, West Liberty University, and then the Turtle Conservancy out in New Jersey. All of those individual organizations helped make this project possible, and we wouldn't be here right now if it wasn't for their cooperation.
At this point, we have all of these 17 turtles that we designated for release. They've all been placed into their soft release pens. They're going to stay there for the next month or so, with us checking on them really frequently just to make sure that they're doing okay in this new habitat for them. After we get to the end of that month, we're going to open up the pens and let them start exploring the habitat overall. At that point, we're going to start shifting into tracking those turtles fairly regularly, probably about once a week, to figure out which parts of this really beautiful, very diverse mosaic of habitats they start actually using as they're moving across the landscape. We'll also start evaluating if they start reproducing, start using nesting areas within this site. In an adaptive management context, we can start adjusting the way we manage the site to get back towards what we want them to have in order to stay as a viable population. We'll be sure to provide updates on this project as it proceeds, so stay tuned to Cleveland Metro Parks for more updates on this great spotted turtle conservation effort.
So you have to take your antenna down in a car wash. How do those stay on?
Yeah, so it's that has been at least initially a challenge with some of this, is that you have to, we did have some issues with antennae popping off with some of these animals because they are in very rugged conditions. But fortunately, we were able to replace a lot of those antennae that did pop off. And
how far do they roam?
So these guys, daily movements are somewhere in the realm of like 10 to 20 meters. So they really don't move all that terribly much. What we did notice right after release, though, is there's this big pulse of movement across the landscape as they start. Basically, the soft release that we mentioned in this is you put them in little cages or pens that basically ideally make them imprint on that site. But after you release them, yeah, they wandered all over the place, some strange places. But now that we're hitting the end of the summer, they've really, and early fall, they've really started slowing down quite a bit and are probably moving towards hibernation. That's going to be a very pivotal part of the project is seeing how they do through hibernation.
What's their average lifespan and how large do they get?
So what you were saying there are adult turtles, so 4 to 5 inches is about the largest they will get. Lifespan, they can live up to 80 years old. One of the challenges with these guys is they take a long time to
grow. You like Jackson Brown?
Taken out of the wild, whether that be through predators or, you know, someone.
Sometimes I think he does that on purpose.
Someone, you know, illegally poaching it, that's a pretty significant knock on the population. So projects like this are going to be really important for this species going forward, especially here in Northeast Ohio, where they're considered a friendly species.
How long does the transmitter run on a set of batteries or whatever?
So transmitters last about a year. It's something like a year and a half if you're looking sort of optimistically in terms of battery life. You will encounter, if you look at other wildlife tracking projects, longer battery lives, but that really is a function of the size of the transmitter.
Yeah.
These guys are very small, so they've got small transmitters, small batteries.
Do you have to be real close to be able to catch it?
So as long as the antennae are working, no. Usually around 300 to 500 meters away, you can pick them up pretty well. And, you know, you do have to keep in mind that these are wooded systems that we're in, and there's, you know, they're not on the surface, they're often underwater, under mud. Mm-hmm. So there's, if you're trying to think of like picking up on your favorite radio station, like, you know, if the radio's like underwater or something, it poses a challenge. So
yeah,
there's lots of environmental factors that can influence that too.
Which reservations can you see these predominantly? I mean, more than others?
So we aren't saying where the release site is.
I tell you, have to kill you.
They are, you know, unfortunately taken out of the wild. And we'll say that this is the only spot within the Cleveland Metro Parks park system where spotted turtles are. They weren't a species that had historically been found for quite some time.
So little turtles we see over at the Rocky River Nature Center are different types of turtles.
More likely.
They're not these spotted turtles. So we're not going to see these spotted turtles over there.
That is worth mentioning. I think at Rocky River Nature Center, we do have spotted
turtles. Not that I'm trying to give it away, but
for the exhibits.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. On exhibit at nature.
Okay.
Yep. You need to release them.
What's the farthest they travel?
Oh, boy. So typical movements, but from where we released them was something closer to like 200, 300 meters, essentially, which is really not very far in absolute terms. We did have one that moved, I don't want to quote exact numbers, but something like 1.5 kilometers into like a dry upland area. There is some evidence that that animal had actually gotten washed down, basically some of the riparian systems through there, and then just kind of wandered overland for a while. So that definitely seemed like the not the norm across those animals.
What are the goals that we were trying to achieve by doing the slow release with the soft release pens? Was it, like Nathan was saying, trying to imprint them on that area? We released a total of 17 animals. Of those 17, 13 have decided to stay relatively close to that area. Four have either decided to really kind of take off, or you know, maybe we've had some antenna challenges. We're not really sure. But for us to still have 13 of the 17 in that area, we consider a pretty big success. You know, going into this, you know, we were shooting for around 50%, so we're well in excess of that percent at this point.
I see a children's book in the office.
Congrats. Excellent work, both of you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The next is communications and connectivity in the Cleveland Metro Parks. Kyle and Lex will be covering this.
Good morning, commissioners. Thank you, Brian. So this info item, once we get it brought up, is to kind of go over high level some of the communications and connectivity issues in Cleveland Metro Parks. A lot of effort from ITS and Anthony Joy came into this presentation as well as a lot of collaboration with park operations. So I'll go ahead and introduce Lex Triazzi, who's going to go through most of the presentation. But one thing I kind of wanted to highlight from a high level is that throughout the years, tower companies have reached out to Cleveland Metro Parks, cell tower companies more specifically. And then also as time has gone on, you know, more people and more staff, more of the public are relying on devices that are connected to the internet or to wireless communications. And even staff, for example, in real estate, we go out and observe properties that are typically on the fringes of Cleveland Metro Parks. We use our own app to determine kind of where we're at, making sure we're on our property or the property we have the right to be on. And so it kind of gives you an indication, and sometimes that's not available. And then also, just like anything else, any other utility, gas lines cross Cleveland Metro Parks, water lines cross Cleveland Metro Parks, fiber lines cross Cleveland Metro Parks, we've acquired properties that have had towers on them. So some of the specific examples we have is on the top right corner, that's what we call the Lakelink North Tower. So this was a tower that was existing on Cleveland Metro Parks property when we acquired it to construct the Lakelink, the Cleveland Foundation Centennial Trail, Lakelink North. And we actually had to work with that tower company to amend the premises to allow the trail to go by. So we worked with that tower company, got some experience in that industry by working with them to amend the premises and then extend the term, which was kind of the give take. Amend the premises was what they gave us to allow us to get our trail through, and we extended the term for them on that particular one. And then also at West Creek Reservation, you know, three big communications towers. That's a unique situation as well. Parma is the underlying landowner, so they still control those towers. Cleveland Metro Parks is a long-term lease, so we operate the park around it. And then also Dunham Park in Maple Heights, if you're familiar. We worked with the city of Maple Heights to acquire that park, large park. It's now a metro park, but the city of Maple Heights kept the cell tower. So it's something that we've always had in our parks, but we've never necessarily explored the potential of us engaging on our own after acquisition with our current properties. So Lex Triazzi will walk through kind of some of our process and where we're at now.
All right. Good morning. I'm Lex. Happy to be here. Okay, let's see. I got this. Okay. So taking a step back more broadly, why cell towers? So part of our early process was identifying potential benefits. So we have sort of like four broad buckets that we kind of discussed internally. First, and I think generally we view it as foremost, improve public safety and emergency response. So if any visitors are in an accident or lost or have a medical emergency, which can and does happen in the parks, they can reliably contact emergency services. So of course that's extremely important in this entire analysis. So In addition, distribution of visitor information. So our park officials can more effectively communicate if there is a hazard or a road closure or something like that to visitors. Second, improved park operations for staff. So staff can more easily communicate with one another, coordinate. You know, oftentimes staff are working in large remote areas. So this is really helpful internally. In addition, we can utilize the towers to place our own equipment on them. So for example, that could include wetlands monitoring for natural resources. That might be road condition detection for park ops. And of course, there's also potential for improved police operations as well. Third, enhanced visitor experience. So, you know, 2025, people like to share their experiences. Visitors can more easily share photos and videos on social media. They can also access digital resources, including our own app. And in addition, you know, there may be areas that we experience increased visitor traffic. So areas that previously didn't have a signal, maybe now it would. People may be more willing to visit. So finally, revenue generation. Cleveland Metro Parks would receive monthly rent from tower companies under these leases. We view this as an added benefit. This wasn't really, you know, our top reason for exploring this. And any lease payment that we would receive would go into a restricted account for the reservation where the tower would be. Okay, so from here, the presentation, just to kind of give you an overview, will be first an internal analysis of low service areas in the parks. Next, I'll walk you through just an overview of some of the industry research we conducted. And then finally, an overview of the process that we've developed in engaging with cell tower companies. So first, internal analysis of low cell service areas. So this first slide, I guess I don't need the pointer, it's fine. This first slide, these are coverage maps from the carriers. So on the left, the Verizon coverage map, and on the right, AT&T coverage map. This is over Rocky River Reservation. The dark red for the Verizon coverage map and the dark blue for the AT&T coverage map, respectively, show what they are claiming is full service in that area, with like lighter red, lighter blue, showing limited service, and then on the Verizon coverage map, the light blue indicates that there are dead spots. So as you can see, they're claiming pretty wide coverage in this area. So by comparison, this, again on the left, is the Verizon coverage map from the previous slide, and here on the right is Cleveland Metro Parks' testing of that coverage. So we had Cleveland Metro Parks employees use a spectrum analyzer, which is a device that is used to detect signal. And they actually went out and used this device to detect whether there was a signal and, of course, crossed that over with their own cell coverage to see if they did, in fact, have coverage. And the blue dots on the map on the right indicate where our employees determined that there was a lack of a signal in that area.
Wow, that's a big difference.
So it's a big contrast. Okay, so both of these maps are North Chagrin Reservation, and these are just maps from the providers. Again, the dark red, dark blue show full coverage, and then the lighter colors indicate that there are spotty coverage or maybe no coverage at all. So we didn't do as much internal analysis in North Chagrin. The providers know that there's an issue. We know there's an issue, so, and you can see that they have that on their own maps.
River Road sucks.
All right, so. So some additional internal data that we collected, and we collected this for about a year from 2023 to 2024, with park operations staff reporting low cell service areas. We had an internal dashboard where staff could go in and report that they were having cell signal issues. And the issues were usually reported from some of our buildings with the general understanding that there were probably large surrounding areas that had coverage issues. And of course, this is individual reporting. It doesn't paint a completely full picture of where the coverage issues are, but it does give you a sense of, you know, all of these different areas are having coverage issues. And up on the screen, I have just like generally the reservations that were reported, but more specifically, some of the buildings that were having issues, police headquarters at Fairview Park, the Nature Center at Rocky River, Millstream Run Maintenance Building, Garfield Park Center, Lookabout Lodge in South Chagrin, and North Chagrin Nature Center all had people reporting issues. Okay, so The data we collected clearly indicated there's a need here. So next we entered a research phase, and this is just a brief overview of some of what we learned and the information that we gathered in looking into this. So first we hired an outside consultant who's an expert in cell tower leasing in Northeast Ohio. He provided market insight on what terms to expect, where to negotiate, what's typical, what's not. He also reviewed our initial proposals that we received from cell tower companies and gave us insight on those terms, you know, where were they overreaching, what was reasonable, what should we expect, things like that. He also reviewed and provided comment on a model lease that we drafted. So that was very helpful in the early phases to kind of get a sense of, you know, what we needed to have in there. So we also attended a webinar related to cell towers. We learned about typical terms. So overview for the length of term, rent, use restrictions, access provisions, those sort of typical terms. We also learned strategies for renewals and amendments. So apparently there's an art to timing your renewals to get the best deal. And then, you know, typical annual rate increases and strategies for controlling amendment terms. In addition, we learned about due diligence for buying property that already has an existing tower, which is helpful. That does come up from time to time. And then finally, some general tips for leveling the playing field. Cell tower companies engage in cell tower lease negotiations every day. A typical landowner, including us, this isn't something we do every day. So it was very helpful to kind of get a perspective there. Okay. In addition, we also examined the processes developed by other public entities. So just very high level here, the Ohio Department of Transportation, their process, they issue site-specific RFPs. They do not work with a broker. And as an entity, they tend to have a steeper fee schedule, and they tend to have more onerous lease terms as a landowner. By contrast, Ohio Turnpike, their process, they hired a broker and they received offers more broadly for more sites rather than issuing a site-specific RFP. And they tended to have lower lease rates and more reasonable lease terms overall. So out of these two entities, Turnpike tended to have more success. So all of this together, the research we conducted looking at other public entities, Cleveland Metro Parks, we kind of came to somewhat of a blended approach with a competitive process. And so we do not work with a broker, but we also do not issue site-specific RFPs. We have a model lease that we developed, and we have terms for procurement. And we issue those to the cell tower companies, and they can more broadly make offers that we can then review and negotiate from there. Okay, so next, just to give you kind of a high-level overview of the process that we've come up with. So this is generally our, like, the term sheet that we issue to cell tower companies. It has them give us an initial starting point for negotiations. So our terms for procurement assessment include length of initial term and any renewal terms, amount of rent and percentage of annual increases, an amount for a security deposit, length of a testing period for the company to engage in their due diligence, a radius for the tenant's exclusive use, so no other towers in that radius, access requirements that they may have, and a description of any past projects with public entities, and then finally, a description of their desired tower location. So and as previously mentioned, we did draft and carefully put together our own model lease, a form that we can go forward with and share with tower companies. So our model lease is a baseline for negotiations with the tower companies. It has some terms that are unique to Cleveland Metro Parks. It also has, you know, all the typical terms that you would see in any cell tower lease. So length of term, rent and security deposit provisions, testing period and inspection terms. Inspection terms. An exclusive use provision, access provisions, and then terms for installation of the tower. We also have some terms that are unique to Cleveland Metro Parks. You know, we're a special kind of landlord. So, for example, we have tree clearing requirements. For every tree cut, two trees must be planted as replacements. If they cut 20 trees, they're going to be planting 40. We also reserve design control. So to the point that towers can be very ugly, we reserve the right to require specific tower design that can include those towers that look like trees.
Have we done that?
We have not gone through like plans and specs yet. So that's
kind of sequoias. Okay.
Yes, that is on the table. It is on the table though. So We can also require buried utilities so we can maintain a little bit more of that park-like setting. You're not going to have utility lines running through. In addition, we can, as mentioned previously, we can install our own equipment for police use, natural resources use, et cetera. And finally, some screening requirements. So for safety and security purposes, we can require tenants to construct and pay for fencing.
Excuse me, how much do we piggyback then on these, where we get the direct benefit by having the structure there?
I guess I don't know what you mean by that.
Well, we get to put our own.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So we just have, they build their tower and then we can work with them to add our own equipment. I don't know exactly.
That's what I mean by piggyback.
Yeah, we can piggyback.
And we do that pretty extensively then, so we get a direct benefit from these.
Yes, we can. There's absolutely potential for a direct benefit.
How many leases have we actually signed?
We are in the process of signing two. So
we don't have any.
We've assumed.
Yeah, we've taken them on. Yeah.
Yeah.
The north, the part of the trip, again, the city of Parma has the ones that are sitting on West.
And, yeah, okay. So the ones that are on our property, we've assumed.
We inherited.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We've inherited.
Yes. So, yes. And finally, screening requirements. For safety and security purposes, we can require tenants to construct and pay for fencing around the tower, keep the public safe, everything like that. Okay, so where are we now? At this point in the process, we've carefully reviewed and negotiated proposals, carefully negotiated leases. We've determined that there are two leases that are good opportunities for us to pursue at this time. First, one in Bentleyville, South Chagrin Reservation, near the maintenance center. This location's pretty notorious for having service issues. Under this lease, there's a one-year initial testing period, and then the initial term would be for 10 years. Second, one in Gates Mills, North Chagrin Reservation, also notorious for signal issues. And again, that's a one-year initial testing period, and then if we move forward, the initial term is for 10 years. And to be clear, no tower will be constructed until the end of the testing period. Entering into the lease gives the company the right to begin their testing, their due diligence, and start the process to see if the tower is feasible. So the initial term doesn't start until the conclusion of the testing period. So testing period is a contingency period for due diligence. All right. So where do we go from here? We're going to continue to collect data, continue to educate ourselves in the industry, make sure we're staying up to date on things, continue to engage with tower companies, staff, and the public. And as I just discussed, we're going to commence testing periods with Guardian Towers for the leases in North Chagrin and South Chagrin reservations. So that's all we have for you today. We welcome any questions.
I have one question. Of the cell towers we have now that we've inherited, what is typically the annual rent from that?
Yeah, so the only one we have that we will eventually get the right to have revenue and that won't occur till 2029 is the Lake Link North one. And the rent right now is $24,000 a year. And so the current market for new leases where they're, you know, the kind we're exploring potentially now is typically $12,000 to $14,000 a year with an annual increase. So the idea being that later in the lease term, it's more of like kind of a long-term payment structure than a near-term windfall.
Now, why would you just have 10-year leases?
So there is, that's a lot of our analysis also determined. Some cell tower companies want to just buy it. So they want to buy the right, they want to buy a permanent easement for an upfront lump sum amount of money. And we ran the tables on those. And for our model, it makes sense to get money over time. And then you also control that a little more, right? So, because the market changes, so you're inherently, the longer out you go, the more risk you take. So they cut down the initial payment. So the more kind of control you can have throughout it is better.
Well, and part of this is also due to the challenges with the existing sites that don't have coverage, right? So the two that you've chosen are in those blue areas that didn't have coverage at all. So part of this is also, does there, I'm just going with what you showed us today with Verizon saying there's coverage, but yet you've tested it and you can tell that there really isn't quality coverage in some of the areas. So wouldn't that be part of this, a lease versus long-term or an easement, that you have the opportunity to get a new system or provider if, in fact, those are not covering in 10 years.
Yeah, and the market's really interesting. Lex and I and the team have done a deep dive into it.
They don't care.
And what it is that you want to get a tower, and then you want to get multiple carriers on that tower. And so it's a game that in an industry that changes often, but there are a couple of big tower companies, and Verizon used to own its own siting company, and then they broke it off, and then, you know, so the idea is if you get a cell tower location and you can get AT&T and Verizon and T-Mobile on it, and then there's lease kickers where your rental amount as the tower landlord goes up as they get more carriers on that tower.
And that's the structure we're working with.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Very good work. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have no whole business. The date of the next registered meeting is November 20th. There is no executive session.
We have a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you, everyone.